Translation, the mothers, after embracing their son, sat him on their laps. Due to pure affection, milk sprang from their breasts. They were overwhelmed with delight, and the tears from their eyes wetted the Lord. Purport, when Lord Krishna was at Vrindavan, even the cows would become moistened by affection toward him, and he would draw milk from the nipples of every affectionate living being. So what to speak of the stepmothers were already as good as his own mother. Om Agyanatam Anandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Litam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadam Mahyam Dadati Sabadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jutapata Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Mitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakamitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Hey Guru Ganada Dina Bandos, Ananda Datai Karnaika Sindos, Vindavana Sinhitavatara, Pasidu Radha Panaya Pichara, Mukam Kroti Vachalam Pangulanga Tegrin Yatikipata Mahambande Shigrun Dinataranam, Ananda Lila Maya Vigrahaya, Himabadi Bacha Visundaraya, Tas Maya Mahapremara Sapataya, Chaitanya Chandraya, Namo Namaste. Okay, taputra manka marupyas nehasnuta payodara harshvi valitatmana shishicho netraja jalai. The mothers, after embracing their son, sat him on their laps. Due to pure affection, milk sprang from their breasts. They were overwhelmed with delight, and the tears from their eyes wetted the Lord. So there's the verse here is about exactly as long as or as the purport. But the purport is, we could say, a seed that can be expanded practically unlimitedly. It describes, in essence, mitam cha saram cha, that one description that something spoken very briefly is with true eloquence. Sharam cha mitam cha, the essence of all speaking. So that the Bhagavatam is the Prabhupada's purport. He's describing this maternal affection, the Vatsalya rasa, basically, and very important subject matter, and can be expanded, of course, beyond this purport, or this within this purport, however one sees it, because here immediately Prabhupada was thinking of Vrindavan and relationship that the mothers there also, of course, have. And even these Vasudev's wives and Devaki, when they saw Krishna and Balaram, they would, as, like when we think of them coming into the arena, Kamsa's wrestling arena, they also had this same maternal affection. They're always moistening their saris with milk, and so are the cows. And they all have this desire. All the Prabhupada calls elderly gopis, and the men, of course, the men, but they see the gopis headed by Mother Yasoda, who's the most advanced person in this Vatsalya Ras. The gopis have. They want to nurse Krishna. They nurse their own sons, but they're always thinking that Krishna is so attractive, they wish Krishna was their own son. And Krishna actually, when the cows and the cowherd boys were stolen for a year, Krishna expanded himself as those calves and those cowherd boys. And he, of course, replicated very easily. He appeared just like all those boys. Exactly, they all have different characteristics in their flutes and clothes, and of course the way they look. And the mothers, thinking in yoga maya illusion ecstasy that this is my boy, but actually it's Krishna, and their ecstasy increased so much more day by day Anandam Buddhivardhanam. This is one. This is a principal aspect of rasa. It's expanding sneha, just like we are all groveling. I know for myself, but people always, devotees always talk about the various levels: ado, shraddha, tatak, sada, sangha, the bhajana, kriya, on up, rati, bhava, prema. But even within prema, above prema, there's sneha, and then mana, pranaya, rag, anurag, and then again bhav, the real high bhav, and mahabhav, which can only be experienced by maybe a few gopis, Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can experience this, but it's not our business. But the sneha, this means a very strong affection toward Krishna, and it's described very well by Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion, of course in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, the various places, how even in the beginning when the demoness comes, Putana, to nurse Krishna, still, because she's in this mood of the maternal mood, then Krishna takes that also, that she's a mother, and he closes his eyes. He just forgets, yes, she's my mother, and she gets... So this verse described by Uddhava in the 3rd canto, describing this bhav of Putana, Ho Bakiyam, she's the sister of Bakasura, Ho Bakiyam Stana Kalakutam, even though on her breast, Stana, she smeared poison, Jigangsaya, with the Kalakutam, and she, Jigangsayor, Apyasadvi, she was not... She was acting like a datri, datru uchitam, a nurse. We know there's 7 types of mothers. And of course, Prabhupada describes these mothers as actual mothers. They're the aunts. They're so much closer than Putana to be a mother. But even Putana, her body, when she died, because she was so purified, it smelled of a guru. And then Krishna's body also smells of a guru. This is the result of the association with Krishna, that even Putana, and this verse is one of, they said to be one of the verses that Vyasadeva was used to attract Sukadeva Goswami. And this is the verse also that this description, Dayalam, that there can it be, how can there be anyone more merciful than Krishna, that he even purified and liberated this Putana? Ho Bakyam Stana Kalakutam. This verse was chanted when Mukunda and Gadadhar had gone to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi. At that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said that a great devotee, Pundarik, is coming, is coming, is coming. So everybody wanted to see who is Pundarik. So, of course, Mukunda, he brought Gadadhar to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi appeared to be some kind of really amazing materialist, surrounded by all kinds of accoutrements, beautiful brass and gold and silver type things. He had even a water pipe, and his hair was beautifully decked out with the most expensive opulent oils and flowers and garlands. He had a spittoon, and his bedstead was so opulent. And so anyway, Gadadhar was thinking, wow, this is amazing. I thought that Gadadhar was so renounced. He was thinking, I came to see some great Vaishnav. The Vaishnavas are so renounced. And Mukunda picked up on this mood of Gadadhar. That, of course, we don't understand it, because Gadadhar is one of the Panchatattvas. But still, in this mood, then Mukunda chanted a whole Bhakti Yam Stana Kalakutam, the same verse describing Putana. And then, of course, hearing that, the great devotee Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who's actually an incarnation of Rishabhanu, the father of Radharani and Gadadhar, is also expansion of Radharani. Pundarik Vidyanidhi fell into a swoon of ecstasy for hours. He kicked away all his beautiful, opulent material surroundings, fainted dead away in ecstasy. When he heard this verse, how Krishna delivered even Putana through this maternal bhav, this mood. So in this mood, there are so many anubhavas that exhibited extremely by Mother Yasoda. And anyone, any woman, and even the men, of course, the men, Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Kim Akarod Ba, there's three or four verses described in that eighth chapter of the Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Nandakin, a whole bhagyam, Nandakin Akarob, that how fortunate Yasoda, Stana Papal, Nanda and Mother Yasoda, they had such a close relationship with Krishna, with inestimable, unfathomable to ordinary persons, anyone like us. And it's described there also, as many of the words are used in one of the verses there, Aropya, that she took, Mother Yasoda took Krishna on her lap. This happened particularly, it happened many times, but these particular verses, after she had seen the universal form in Krishna's mouth, and she was just totally bewildered. Nashta Smritiya Gopi, that Gopi means Mother Yasoda, that she completely forgot. And she saw all the universes and time, space, and karmic activities in the mouth of Krishna. She became completely under the yoga maya, and she okay, and just like a dream, and she forgot all about it. And but she's being praised by Vyasadeva and Sukadeva, and Trayo Panishad Bhischa, that even the great personalities, big intellectuals, they study all the Upanishads. Sankhya Yoga, the yogis, they study the Sankhya, Sankhyoscha Sattvatai, but still, Upagiyamana Mahatmyam, they chant all the glories of God in so many ways. Mother Yasoda achieved this, and she got Krishna as her son and was able to feel this great ecstasy. Of course, Mother Yasoda is the eternal mother. It's described how, and previously Drona and Dara, they desire to become Krishna's mother and father, but they're also the eternal mother and father. So without much austerity, they assume the form of Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj, sometimes Mother Yasoda is so much in ecstasy in separation. When Krishna goes to Mathura, described by Rupa Goswami, then Mother Yasoda, she chastises Nanda Maharaj and says, what good is it that you're the king of Vraj? You don't even have your son here. Where is our son? I cannot feed him. She curses practically Nanda Maharaj. And he says, what do you mean? He's right here. In a similar way, even Mother Sachi, sometime after Lord Chaitanya left, she was seen in the similar exact ecstasy, talking about Balaram and Krishna, and Krishna and Balaram are just now coming. And Nityananda as Balaram, he also in relationship with Shivas, he takes Shivas, even though he's grown, he takes Shivas and his wife Malini as his mother and father, and he acts just like a child. This is all hidden. This was hidden by even from most of the devotees at the time, and even Malini, who was elderly, she would also have milk would come and Nityananda would nurse from her. So these are some of the ecstasies. There are so many described. How Rupa Goswami says that Mother Yasoda, although she's in extreme anxiety for feeling separation of Krishna, though some of her friends say, why are you feeling separation? Although you're supposed to be feeling separation, but you see that from your breast, your white milk is flowing, and that's even milk making the Ganga white. It's adding to the whiteness of the Ganga, and from your eyes, the tears are flowing, and the mascara is flowing black, and that's enhancing the black hue of the Jamuna. So you're surrounded by these two great rivers. So why should you be in anxiety? And then it's also said that how ironic it is that Mother Yasoda's also when Krishna lifts Govardhan Hills, she becomes so blinded by tears of ecstasy that she cannot even see Krishna, although she wants to. And then the milk is also flowing. So it is said that, that although that milk is flowing over her breast, like her mountain-like breast, in ecstasy of seeing Krishna and knowing Krishna as her son, but the same, in the same way, he's holding a mountain in his hand. So there's, in the Sanskrit poetry, this irony is given. This and it's also said that Mother Yasoda, she's so much in this ecstatic mood. Sneha means affection, very deep affection for Krishna. Always worried about Krishna. Where is he gone? Oh, we don't hear his flute. And then the milk starts to flow, especially near the end of the day. And there, Nanda Maharaj goes up on the little top of his palace, and he's looking out for the boys. Where are they? Where are they? And in this way, it is said that Mother Yasoda, she's in so much anxiety of ecstasy and separation that even if she has this chance to swim in an ocean of nectar, but if she cannot see Krishna, then this nectar appears just like the worst arsenic poison. On the other hand, she may be standing in flames, Mother Yasoda, in fiery flames, but it'll appear just like the cool Himalayan mountains if she can see Krishna's face. So there's this desire always on the part of Krishna's parents and others. They always want to see Krishna. You know, sometimes and the gopis, they point out, oh, there's Krishna, he's going to steal something now. And Mother Yasoda says, don't disturb him, let him steal, because I just want to see him do it. I want to see him do it. And this is one of the actually ecstatic Anubhavas, where the mothers and father, they chastise their son, they chastise Krishna, they chastise Balaram. Of course, if they don't have a chance to interact with Krishna or Balaram, they have to interact with their son, their own sons. But they always want, especially in Braj, they want to interact with Krishna and Balaram. And they chastise him. They chastise Krishna Balaram. They pat the head. They smell the head of Krishna Balaram. We know when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met with Raghupati Upadhyaya, and he was traveling in a dialogram to Balava Bhattacharya's house. At that time, Raghupati Upadhyaya, who was a great poet and a great devotee, when he first met, he's described as a very nice gentleman, but he was a great devotee. Of course, that's also said. And so therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, oh, my dear sir, you please tell me some of your poetry. So at that time, he recited several verses. He probably recited many more than what we get in the Chaitanya Charita, but unfortunately, we don't have all of them. But well, the famous one is described where he says Shutim apare smritim itare bharatam anye bhavanta bhajantam bhavabita. That Raghupati Upadhyaya, he had composed this verse, aham hiha nandam bande yasyalindi param brahma. That some people, they, out of fear of God, they worship the Shutis or the Smritis, or they study the Mahabharata. But as far as I'm concerned, Raghupati says, he says to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I am simply meditating on Nanda Maharaj, because in his courtyard, the Supreme Brahman is crawling as a little boy. So there's no need, just as it says, what is the use? Mother Yasoda, she has no need to study Upanishad or Sankhya Yoga like the yogis, or do any of the austerities, any of these things, because already Krishna has become her son. So therefore, the devotees, they shortcut all these processes. They go directly to Mother Sachi or Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj, and they study the pastimes. They relish and hear again and again. They want to hear it again and again. Of course, Raghupati Upadhyaya, he composed so many verses, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him. Ultimately, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Ujjvala Ras. He's enlivening everyone with the Madhurya Ras. But still, we have to understand the ecstasy of Mother Yasoda. No one is jumping ahead. We're thinking, we're hoping to become das, das, das. of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis. And remember, Mother Yasoda is also gopi, gopi. We often think of gopis in this way, Madhurya, but Mother Yasoda is described as gopi. This is also gopi bhartu pada kamalayo, dasa dasana dasa, the servant of the gopis. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described, I think, by Vishwanath Chakravarti, Adajo Bhagavan Vrajesha Taneo Tadamana Ramya Kachu Pasana Vrajabhu Ragena Yakalpita, that Mahaprabhu is given as the best form of worship is the gopis. And the Mother Yasoda is also in this. She's not in the Madhurya Ras, but she's the gopi also. So it definitely is, devotees take great ecstasy in hearing about it. In the month of Damodar, Namo Damodar, Ananta Vishnu, Prasida Prabhu, Dukha Jalabdi Magnam, we chant the Damodar Astakam. It's not like Prabhupada said we're bigots. Sometimes Prabhupada was asked about, well, why do we have Ramchandra? Why do we sometimes installing Ramchandra, like in Bombay? And Prabhupada said we're not bigots. It's kind of a funny statement, but sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he enacts these coward boy pastimes, you know, twirling the rod, you know, between his legs and over his head. And so we also take great pleasure in these things, hearing about them. Anyway, so another word used here is the harsha vivalitatmana, overwhelmed. So, of course, in Bhagavatam, we come to, in some of the later cantos, that that one king, he had a son named Harshashoka. Because in the material world, everyone is after this harsha, happiness, it means. Harsha, marsha, bayodvegar. In 12th chapter of Gita, it's described, mukta yas sachame priya, that the various attributes of the great devotees, the whole half, last half of the 12th chapter of the Gita describes who is dear to Krishna. And one of the slokas, it describes harsha marsha bayod vegar, one who is free of harsha amarsha, so-called happiness. But this is this type of material happiness, fear. He's very dear to Krishna. So therefore, the best way to transcend harsha marsha bayod vegar, anxiety, one who puts no one into anxiety, who is not put into anxiety, harsha shoka, he doesn't lament, shoka stana sahasrani. For a materialistic person, shoka stana sahasrani, bayastana sahasrani, there's thousands of times that he becomes full of anxiety, full of lamentation. And so Krishna says, though, someone who's dear to me, he's free of this material, mundane happiness. Therefore, the harsha shoka, the son of the king Chitraketu, he is a very good example of, this story is a very nice story to describe how, what happens when we're attached to this mundane happiness. That the king was not destined to be happy by having a son. All he had, millions of wives, none of them could bear him a son. Probably it was partially his fault. But he couldn't have a son. But finally he got a benediction, he would have this son, Harsha Shoka. He thought, well, Harsha means happiness, Shoka, he knew it meant lamentation, but never mind, at least I'll have a son. But then the son was taken away. He couldn't enjoy that son. So this is what happens in the material world, that we're all in this position of Chitraketu, that we want to enjoy, whether through through a son. And everyone has this maternal longing, paternal longing, at least if they're normal. Nowadays, there's lots of demoniac, more and more demoniac persons in Kali Yuga. But in previous times, this was a very wonderful thing, although material, that Prabhupada said if someone would nurse for at least 6 months, the child would become very strong, what to speak of even longer. Some kids they nurse, and we see that Krishna was nursing, you know, later on here. He's quite advanced in age. but even a little baby. But nowadays, the babies are being deprived. They won't even live. They might be killed in the womb, or if they might come out, they get some kind of garbage formula, or they just starve to death due to mismanagement of the world's resources. It's a very tragic situation. But in nature, we already read this previously about the cows during the time of Yudhisthira and how they would moisten the field. The same words were used, shishichur, the wetness, and the payot, especially this word, the udders would be filled up. So the cows, they would also nurse Krishna directly, and their eyes would also be filled with tears. So this is natural maternal instinct, but these things are being stifled by in this demoniac Kali Yuga, that no, you can simply give some formula. And then even if, some woman may be arrested if she tries to nurse her baby in a public place. There's a big hue and a cry. Oh, what is she doing? This is a horrible thing. You know, she's nursing her baby. You know, you want to nurse your baby. This is considered really off the charts in public. But so this is so important. And that one become, and so Krishna's showing this example. He's stealing milk. The milk, the cow is our mother. Cows are being killed. And Prabhupada said that Krishna is showing the example that milk is so important. Mother's milk, cow, especially the cow's milk, nurses all of human society. That it should be stolen. If you cannot get it any other way, it's okay. Just steal it. And these are one of the Anubhavas, when Mother Yasoda or Rohini, they mildly chastise their sons. Oh, you have stolen this. You have stolen this milk. And Mother Yasoda, she tries to get the best possible milk, but still she's thinking, oh my God, I should have gotten Krishna married here. I should have kept him in Vrindavan. He's gone off to Mathura, Dwarka. And when she hears the description, sometimes by Uddhava, then she begins to cry in ecstasy, and she curses her own milk, saying, oh, this milk is no good. I tried so hard to get milk, the best possible milk for Krishna, and still he has left Braj. So we like to hear these pastimes more and more. It's increasing our bliss, our ecstasy, harsha. But this is not mundane harsha. Otherwise, if we put our mind again into any material attachment, then we're subject to this harsha marsha. Overwhelmed with, instead of maternal love or paternal love, we'll be overwhelmed with mundane fear and mundane misery. Though fortunately, we've been blessed to be able to hear about these pastimes, Leela of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and otherwise, without chanting the holy name, without hearing Shoka Moha Bhayavaha, it says, in the first canto, we read that before in the seventh chapter, that in the morning, in the night, in the evening, Svayam Prata Granam Bhakta, by hearing and chanting the holy name, these various pastimes, will be free of all this fear, lamentation, bhaya, fear. So there's actually no other way. Nastyeva, 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 gatiranyata, to get out of this. Narad Muni, he described that also in the fifth chapter at the end that we heard. There's practically no other way, whether one is a simple person, itara, or he's a very learned person. Everyone can attain freedom from the bonds of material, this material energy, by hearing. And then he says there's actually no other way. No other way to do it. So we have this way as a sum total of all yoga, all types of pious activity, pavanani manishyam. And by hearing it, we never give it up. Even in Bhagavad Gita, the analogy is given, Gopala Nandana, that Arjuna is just like a calf. He's drinking, and all the sages and other devotees, they're also drinking this milk. This being the milk is this Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is the coward boy. He's milking all the Vedas and giving us the essence, which is Bhagavad Gita. the essence of all of Vedas, Veda Shastra Puranani. And so it's very wonderful. I'm about to speak of Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, we drink it. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. Mahoruha Rasika Bhuvi Bhavaka, the Rasika devotees, they drink it. They drink it like milk. Milk is liquid religiosity. So the Bhagavatam is like this nectar. What we know as the greatest nectar in this material world or anywhere is this milk. And especially when there's maybe little honey in the milk. Prabhupada said banana milk. This is the highest preparation. Paramana, the greatest food in this material world is this milk. And throughout, like in fourth canto, when Prithvi Maharaj was milking the earth, you know, different entities acted as pots, and he would milk the earth because the earth wasn't giving forth. So this analogy of the milk is not something whimsical, but it is the nectar of this material world, liquid religiosity. And drinking this Pibantiye Bhagavata Atmana Satam, so many times described, just like, drink it. So just to make it clear, it's compared to milk. A very wonderful nectar. In fact, milk and amrita, nectar, are synonymous in some parts of the Bhagavatam. Amrita, the ocean of milk. So many things came out of it. So it's described as amrita. But the amrita itself came out of it, as well as Lakshmi and so many things. But amrita is milk. And for humanity to kill the cow who is producing the milk, or to disturb the maternal instincts, natural maternal instinct, is the greatest demoniac thing, and something that we must always preach against. And by pouring upon, just like the six Goswamis, they were pouring Govindamritai, the nectar, Govindamrita, the nectar of the pastimes of Govinda. And Govinda, the word itself means that he loves the cows, he satisfies the cows, he satisfies the senses, satisfies the earth. The earth itself takes the form of a calf, a cow, when in distress. So we're all entering here into this Vatsalya Ras right now. Hearing about it is very wonderful. And if there's any more comments, please, my brain is not so good today, but somebody else can say something.
Your brain is doing very well, Prabhuji. A wonderful class. You touched on something that I technical that I guess I never really thought much about. Generally we think of bhava as one of the stages that we aspire to come to on our way to eventually prem. But then you mentioned that above prem there's other stages, bhava again. Could you talk more about that?
Well, yeah, because in our uneducated way, like just like Prabhupada, when I was speaking with Prabhupada one time, he was talking about how when a child does a picture of Krishna, he was talking to me in Bardraj in Mayapur, he said, no one complains. That's an interesting statement. He said, no one complains. Why? Because there's bhava. You know, so does that mean the child is in the highest stages of bhava, mahabhava, just before mahabhava? No, it means feeling, like the anubhavas and bhava. So these things, they have various meanings. Mm-hmm. So just like he said, he told Bharadraja and Singh Santosh also, when they were playing harmonium at different times, he appreciated their harmonium playing. But a lot of devotees would play because they emulated Prabhupada's style. So Prabhupada said, yeah, it's very nice. You're playing very nicely. I mean, both of them told me at different times that Prabhupada praised their harmonium playing because they were expert musicians and they could play like Prabhupada. It would take a long time, but they could emulate Prabhupada. Something that Prabhupada could do spontaneously, they would take weeks to perfect, but they could do it. So he said, there's bhava. He said, others, they're playing, there's no bhava, there's not much feeling, because they would play sometimes like rock and roll style chords and nothing like Prabhupada play. I mean, they have a harmonium and your fingers are there and you're playing music, but it doesn't, it's not that mood. So our aspiration is really to be in this mood of Prabhupada. If we're a musician, you know, we should try to play a little more like, you know, to find out what did Prabhupada like. Did he want us to sing, you know, like the Sahajiyas or the Bangladeshis, or, you know, just like when Prabhupada heard them singing in Mayapur in 77, they had a kirtan contest. Different groups came from around Bengal. And Prabhupada, up in his room, you could hear it very clearly. He said, they are simply crying for money. So, I mean, you might think, oh, this is wonderful. We have so many groups here, and they're all singing. They're all from Bengal. They're all Bengalis. So Prabhupada made this comment, you know. So we should try to understand what was Prabhupada's mood, Bob. Generally means move. Anu Bhav, Satika Bhav, just like all the symptoms. We know that Mother Yasoda, the paternal ras can never equal the maternal ras. That's why, because she's exuding this milk for Krishna. I mean, Nanda Maharaj can't do that. So the paternal ras can never be as deep. It cannot experience the Satika, but it can experience the other Asta Satika Bhav, you know, the other ones, but not this one. The milk flowing that Mother Yasoda can experience.
Pushkar,
that was one. That was wonderful. Thank you,
Pushkar Prabhu. You always say things that kind of like the lights go on or something. But I remember there was a letter to Jadarani and all the artists in L.A. and the artists over the years. They became very, you know, much more expert at painting. And there was a series of paintings that were shown to Prabhupada, and Ramaswar Maharaj and Radhabalava, they went to India with these paintings. And then Prabhupada got upset, so much so that at the end of the letter, Ramaswar Maharaj is saying, at this point, Prabhuji, you can understand that we were shaking like leaves. You know, that's how upset Prabhupada was.
Wait a minute. Do you remember where this letter is?
It's probably in the folio.
Yeah, of course it's in the folio, but what I'm trying to get at is I don't remember an instant where they brought paintings to India. Generally, the paintings were shown in L.A. or New York.
Right.
I'd say almost every painting was either shown to Prabhupada in New York or L.A. I don't remember, you know, because the paintings never, you know, I don't remember the instance where he was so angry.
Okay,
could have been like you're mixing up a couple of things. I'm trying to, you know, with my tiny brain figure out what you're getting at, but, you know, I wouldn't accept what you just said face value, because first of all, we didn't bring the paintings to India. Second of all, yeah, I don't remember him getting that angry. If he got angry, he didn't get that angry at certain. I mean, I just don't remember. He got disturbed with certain paintings, you know, but as far as that angry, like you're mentioning, I'd have to see a letter, I'd have to see a reference.
Okay.
Because sometimes you get stuff like piece of this and a piece of that, like a golden mountain. If you've seen gold, you've seen a mountain, you dream of a golden mountain, Prabhupada said. So that thing, same thing happens in our conscious state. You know, it happens to me. I remember something and then I bring in this. But I definitely, being in the art department with Prabhupada for a long time, I don't remember any instance where we brought the paintings. And where he became angry, he might have seen the picture of the painting, and he might have seen the painting itself in L.A., but that would have to be, I'm not in a forensic mood where I'm going to go looking that up right now, but actually, yeah. Jadarani's in town, she's in Alachua right now, I could ask her, I didn't have any intention, but if you want, you could call her up.
You have her number?
I could find out where she is.
Okay.
I know she's going to see Prang Govinda today at lunch, probably right now. He's a Bengali pundit that lives around here. And if you want, I can give you that number right now. You could call him. He'll tell you where she is right now.
Great.
But I'll tell you. Oh, you want me to tell you right now?
As you like.
Huh?
As you like.
If you want to ask her, you can, because I haven't really. Let me see here. I got it right in front of me.
I practically heard this in real time. I was in L.A., and the news came back, and I heard about it at that time.
Yeah, but you don't think the paintings went there?
Yeah, they did.
Or you don't remember what paintings they were?
10th Canto.
Oh, I wasn't there for 10th Canto paintings. I don't think Prabhupada was there for 10th Canon of Paintings. And I never heard he was they only did very few.
It was around the 10th.
Not very few. What?
It was paintings to replace the paintings in Krishna book.
Right. Oh, yeah, he was saying, why are they redoing? I mean, a lot of those paintings were good. But the thing was, he wasn't there. He left L.A. in 76, and he didn't go back after that. So, he wasn't there. First of all, that eliminates that right there, because he never went back to L.A. after 76.
That's right.
And therefore, that eliminates that idea that he was seeing the paintings live. Now, he got 10th Canto Part 1 and 2, and 3 was just that small little book, came out after Prabhupada left. So we're talking here, we're narrowing it down to Part 1 and 2.
Okay, I dropped the letter. Just forget what I just said. The point I was going to make was that Prabhupada liked the original paintings.
He did say that. That was one of the reasons he said he said the money that the art department and the Sanskrit department were getting, he called them luxury department. He was very disturbed more that they were getting paid. Like Narayan was coming in, twice a week and getting 900 or 1,000 bucks a month, and then the others were getting like 1,200 a month. In those days, a lot of money, well, it covered rent, whatever it was, but then he said they could all move to Bombay. There was no need of art department anymore to divert the money to the BI, to the science. And so that's there. But as far as trembling and anger, I'm not sure. But he just said there's no need now. We have enough. He went from encouraging the artists and then practically did not a pendulum, but he definitely went on and just said, well, if they want, they can move to Bombay. But as far as I can see, they're redoing the same paintings over. Now, I don't know when you're doing 10th Canto if you should reprint and just do Krishna book paintings. I mean, they became more sophisticated. And a lot of people like those 10th Canto paintings, that's for sure. But it went on and on all the way up to, and then, still some artists are being a little bit supported, not very much. But it went on through Rameshwar and Bhagavan's era up till 86 when they unceremoniously left the movement. And they had spent hundreds and thousands of dollars supporting the art department. So they didn't take that so seriously. They just wanted to have new paintings, and the artists had to be supported. But they were doing 11th and 12th canon, which hadn't been done. So anyway, all this stuff, But Jadavani has a 900-page book, which anyone could see on her website, and almost 90% of anything that had to do with the art department is in that book, which she puts by the year, 1966, 67, 68, she interviewed the other artists. She had all the letters and all instructions. Something she missed, but she's got a lot of it there, like I said. And you can read through that just to see. But she was also disturbed. She couldn't understand why Prabhupada reversed himself on the art department. I explained it to her back in 94 or 5. I said, well, I think because of the money thing, a lot of it had to do with the money, supporting the artists and Narayan, everyone getting money. And he didn't want to spend the money on it. He just thought they're luxury departments. He said he described as Sanskrit too, And he was disturbed because they were changing. Prabhupada had his moods also, so.
Who wrote
the book? You have to scope what Prabhupada said and get the whole thing.
Yeah, aside from the history, this point I wanted to make was the early paintings, they were kind of colorful and childlike in some ways, not very expert, but Prabhupada liked them. And it was along the same lines as something you were saying about the Bhav, about there's some innocence, there's some devotion. You can feel it in the paintings, and that's all. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, the high point is Krishna book paintings, when they all came together and had the assembly line, and then headed by Bhardwaj with Jadrani and Muralidhar, and of course, Devahuti was doing her own paintings. But those paintings, you can't replicate that mood. Had something to do with Prabhupada being around, and they were touched. They were empowered.
Pandita, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to ask who wrote that book. Jadarani wrote that book?
Yeah, no, it's her book, but she never could bring it to a finish and get it printed.
Oh.
And it's been ready for, I'd say, at least 13 years or 14 years.
Oh.
It's called The Art of Spiritual Life. Anyway, it's there on her website year by year. I don't know if she finished putting up all. I mean, I've read it through a lot of it.
Oh.
But, you can see little asides in it where she might have got rid of them, right. And where she's asking her editors, should I use this? Should I say this? Should I say that? She could never really finish editing the book. It was nothing to do with Narayan Raj, although if she put it out, she'd probably glorify him. But it was all, Prabhupada and this and that. But I've heard that she said other things that, all the paintings she did before she surrendered to Narayan Raj didn't have the proper mood or something. I mean, I've heard different things. I don't take it that seriously.
Yeah.
She'll always deny anything you accuse her of anyway.
When's your birthday, 12?
The next
What's that?
Her boss is unmuted.
I'll ask another question. Since we're talking about Prabhupada and his mood and the art, and it's just kind of got my curiosity stirred up here. Could you tell us what things disturb Prabhupada the most in the paintings that you may remember? What things that really bothered him about the paintings? And then at the other end of the spectrum, what things were done in the art department, painting-wise, that Prabhupada expressed the most pleasure with?
Okay, well, I could say right off the bat, just the last couple of days, I'm listening to some of the last... Somebody's unmuted. Anyway, I've been listening to these tapes from 77. And
about what you're doing. Chris sees them a lot. But I take spiritual medicine.
Mute him.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was Ganesh. I couldn't tell where it was coming from. I had to hang up. I'm sorry.
All right. So yesterday, in the last few days, I have some unreleased Prabhupada talks in his room in Vrindavan, Mayapur, like that. Especially in Mayapur. And so they're showing Prabhupada some of these books, and they're talking about Parikkhit, and I think they were showing it might have been before 77, because 76, some of the stuff, but it seemed like 77. They were looking at the fifth canto, at this painting of, you can't tell really where they're looking at, but anyway, it was a very ferocious mood in the painting, and Prabhupada said, show this to the deprogrammer. So he was laughing, and then he was saying how, they were saying a Parikkhit is very expert, he did this one, and so Prabhupada's commenting, but I need to listen to these more so I can get in tune. But I know that he really liked the painting Parikkhit did where Krishna's carrying Nanda's shoes on his head. I mean, that's a bit of a later painting, but he liked that painting. And he, as far as that painting where back cover of 5-2, where Judd Bharat is being he is being attacked by the dacoits. They were going to cut him up or sacrifice him in front of Durga, Kali, and then the deity burst open with these entities, these females that were cutting the demon's heads off. Prabhupada said, whoever did that painting, thank him very much. He liked that. Now, when I was in the quarters with Prabhupada in 75 with Bharadraj, he actually complained about Jadarani's paintings. I might have said this. I don't want to belabor it, but he didn't like the long hair. Like, there's one painting that people still like to – there's several paintings that they still like to print where Krishna has really long hair, but Prabhupada said, no, we do not want this long hair. He said women like long hair. This is in Mayapur in 75, and he's talking. He called me in because he liked the painting I did of Bhakti Siddhanta. And Bharadraj was there too, because Bharadraj was always, and he was questioning us. If you want to hear about dissatisfaction, I might have said this before, but it's always good, And he was questioning Bharadraj because I hadn't been in LA in a long time, and since 70. And so there was this detailed work that this Indian fellow, Kirpal Singh, had been brought to LA and been paid a huge amount of money in those days, like 40,000. Bharadraj estimated he'd been paying 35-40,000 bucks. Jaitirtha had paid him to do those, they're above the deities inside the altar. Very decorative work, but you could probably get it done in India for way less, and just install it. Or so anyway, he was living there and they were supporting him in LA. And Prabhupada said that he couldn't believe how much they spent. He thought that was preposterous, And then he said, we're not interested in so much minuteness. he called it, these little details. You know, and there's nothing about Krishna. It's all little pictures of birds and roosters and flowers. If you look at it, it's still there. It's anyway, that's when he said, if a child paints Krishna, you know, no one complains. And then he started saying, he was saying all about how in the beginning, Jadarani was not very expert. Then he put his finger up and he said, and still, and, you know, and then he said, painting big, big hair, you know, because she did a few paintings with the big, big hair. He didn't like the big, big hair. Anyway, then, and beard, he said, avoid beards, you know, avoid. He didn't like the beards. He didn't like long hair. You know, Bhardwaj asked Prabhupada in one time in later on in Berkeley, I don't know if it was later on. It was during the Rathi after time, up in Berkeley, 75 or 74 or 5. And he said, well, we paint Lord Chaitanya with long hair when he, you know, before he's a sannyasi. And Prabhupada said, yes, he was a hippie. You know that story, right? And he said, he was a hippie, but he has come to save you and to shave you. So that's there, you know. Anyway, Prabhupada didn't want us to go out of our way also to take classes. You know, Jadarani was asking about taking outside art classes. And he said, yes, Bhagavatam in the morning and Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion evening. You should attend all the classes, he said. And she said it again. You know, she'd say, no, we want to take art classes. And he said, no, he kept stressing, just stick to our books. And anyway, there's lots of things. And he didn't like the hair, and he didn't like muscles. He criticized some of the paintings because Krishna looked like he had muscles. He looked like a meathead, he called them. Or it was Narad Muni. There was a painting of Narad Muni. He looked like a meathead or a muscle man. And he didn't like that. It had to be right. So,
how long was Krishna's hair?
Well, I mean, actually, his description in one at Kaishore age or Yovana age that he has really long hair, right in Nectar Devotion. I read that recently. You know, his hair is way down to, it says, to his waist. But Prabhupada didn't want us to show that aspect. So it actually says that. Rupa Goswami describes that. At one point, Krishna has really long hair. But he didn't want to show Krishna like that. Just, I guess, just the same reason Gaudiya Math, they shave up once a month, and Prabhupada said once a week, you know, he wanted people clean shaven. He was preaching. He didn't want us to be identified at all with hippies. He didn't want Krishna to look like a hippie. Although he said Lord Chaitanya was a hippie. He was a hippie. Ha ha. Anyway, so there's so many things come to mind. But I know Prabhupada said, told me, stick to the books. Stick to the books. Because I did a painting and I couldn't quote a shloka to go with the painting. He said, what shloka is it? And I gave a general answer saying, well, Nectar Devotion. And he said, but where is it? What shloka? So much for knowing shlokas. And I said, in a very weak way, I said, this is 77. I said, right near when Prabhupada couldn't even see after a week after that. And he wasn't even getting out of bed about a week after this pastime. This time he was sitting up on his outside, up on his balcony that faces the alleyway there. And he was looking at my painting and saying, what is the idea? And it was real scary because he looked at it for quite a while without saying anything. And then I said, well, Krishna's there with the coward boys. It's the Nectar Devotion. And then that's when he said, where is it in the book? And then I said, but Krishna is unlimited, and Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna is unlimited, but you are limited. Stick to the book.
What are your thoughts of a painting like the painting of Lord Nisringadev with the not very friendly looking Lord Nisringadev, where he's got all the entrails wrapped around his neck and blood dripping from his whiskers and his mane, being in public display, like in the temple room, guests come see that.
LA, we had that painting up. I mean, Prabhupada wanted one of those paintings in every temple. It's not an accident. So as far as guests and being politically correct, I mean, Prabhupada actually had Jadarani paint quite a few of them to put in temples. So, I mean, you know, we could have said, no, Prabhupada, this doesn't go over. I never heard that. But they still have another, a modern version in L.A., right? And a lot of temples have it. But then I did a painting of Nrsimhadev in Calcutta when Prabhupada was there on the wall, a mural. And it was a friendly Nrsimhadev with, you know, with Prahlad on his lap or standing by him, one of those from a poster. I copied it. And Prabhupada didn't complain about that, you know. So I don't know what to say. The entrails. I don't know if he specifically said it might have been they only had that picture at that time and they did the entrails, you know.
So Pushkar Prabhu, I've always been curious about this one painting. And I know the artists, they would have meetings and they would discuss who was going to do what painting, and they do thumbnails and then come back with, you know, the sketch on the canvas. And there was a process to it. But this painting of the birth pastime of Krishna and the dungeon of Kamsa, there's like an 11-foot Vishnu behind a baby Krishna.
Why do you say he's 11 feet?
Well, he's huge.
Oh, yeah. That's on the cover of the first book or
expanded 10th canto painting. And if you look at the verses, it's clear that Krishna is first appearing as a baby Narayan, a baby Vishnu, four-armed Vishnu baby, then as a baby Krishna. Then Devaki, she's afraid that Kamsa is going to see, so she asks him to hide the form. But if you go to the verses in 10th canto, it's clear that it's a newborn child. It's not a 16-year-old. It's not a mature Vishnu form. So how did that happen, that painting?
Well, I'm not sure that you're totally right about that he didn't appear just like Vishnu. We have to go and look at that. You can look it up right now anyway. But
I can send you an email. I'll send you an email.
No, I mean, I could just check it, S. Narhari or whoever's on right now. But I'm not sure, you know.
It's
another Krishna book that came out. It's like a huge, like, deluxe version, and they have like a painting, it's a different painting of Krishna or Vishnu being a baby right after his birth with David.
Oh, the watercolors by that European lady, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the whole book is just illustrated by one person.
I've seen that book. Some people don't care for those pictures because they make Krishna look skinny with a pointed nose. And, you know, it doesn't seem like she read the description that well, but...
Anyway.
Okay. So anything else?
In the older paintings, it seemed, and this may not be correct because I'm not really an artist, but just sort of my observation, it seemed like the older paintings of Krishna going way back, Krishna looked more like a beautiful, for lack of a better term, cartoon character. And then as time evolved, he started to look more realistic, with more human-like rather than cartoon-like. Is that a correct observation?
Maybe a little more simplistic, probably, but I'm not sure about all that. Exactly.
It almost seemed like later, like the artists were maybe looking at models of like a beautiful person, and it's almost like you could
sometimes recognize
the person. You could almost recognize the model.
Yeah, well, that shouldn't have been like that. That's for sure. Yeah, that, you know, there's one painting that was done about 1990. It's a famous painting of Radha Krishna that, you know, was really famous. And if you know the people that posed for it, it exactly looks like those kids, how they looked then about 20 years ago. Anyway, exactly Krishna. And Radharani's head is on his shoulder and like that. But I mean, not many people know what those people are, so they don't know all that. But if you do, then you kind of, you know. Anyway.
It's getting a little late for Prabhu.
Okay.
The only point I want to challenge is when you said earlier that your brain wasn't functioning well today. It's
well on the phone. It's a
break glass.
Yeah, I'm trying to see this. I was just going to look this up to satisfy myself. I'm not good at finding stuff in the folio. But I'm trying to find out about that Vishnu form a little closer. 10th Canto, Part 1, it says Advent Introduction, Satisfied, Showing a da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay. So, yeah, I guess he doesn't appear till in the second chapter, right?
Yeah, it's 10... 3, 9, and 10 is where
that you found it.
I have it. I can send you by email.
I'm gonna look it up right now myself. Okay, you know, I'll just look it up, and we'll talk about it next time.
Yeah, I can.
Those are the slokas where.
I'll send you an email. I'll make it easy for you. I've got it in email.
I'm already on the 10-3 here, and it's 10-3, 8, 9.
9-10. Verse 9-10.
And that's the description, right?
That's the verse, and then go to the purport, and you'll see it's clear. Then you go to 11. Then you go to 12, and then you go to 30.
Uh-huh. 3, huh? Birth of Lord Krishna, right, yeah. Okay, 9 and 10.
Right.
Wonderful lotus-like eyes, four hands, yeah. Is a moo-born child, right.
Right.
You're right. But later on, does he appear as Vishnu?
No.
At no time does he appear as big Vishnu?
No.
Because Prabhupada okayed it, and so many times he never found fault with it. So it must be some ecstasy.
Well, I asked Jadarani personally about this, and she got defensive. I was prepared for her to say that Prabhupada wanted me to paint it like this. I was prepared for that.
Yeah?
No, I think it slipped through the cracks. I'm not even sure. I don't know what happened.
Well, you know, whether he's little, it probably describes where he's, you know, when he protected Vishnu in the womb, he was thumb-sized. And Prabhupada said, it doesn't matter if he's thumb-sized or unlimited, he's always the same. He's just Vishnu. So that's one thing. Anyway, okay. Adios, I'm done. All glories to Shrimad.
Before everybody leaves, don't forget tomorrow is Ekadashi. Be prepared.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Hare Krishna, thank you.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you, Pushkar.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We'll see everyone.
Thank you, Ramanandaji.
Hare Ball.
Thank you.
Hare Ball. Hare Ball.